Senator from the 9th, the senator from DeKalb would like an inquiry. Do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Thank you, Senator. Earlier, before session began, you had grabbed me in the hall and referenced one of the tax credits that essentially they gutted in this bill.
Right.
And they gutted that tax credit because it was
an
easy
Ahab
place to show savings, and there's no one that uses that tax credit that gives contributions to the leadership
right.
in the House. And so would you talk about that just for a moment so that everyone understands where we are?
I had come to you yesterday because I was really concerned that in the bill, of course, yesterday in the House, they had completely eliminated the Ahab, well, we call it the Ahab credit. It's the Affordable Housing Assistance Payment. And typically that credit is actually used for nonprofit agencies, many of the homeless shelters, battered women's shelters, and some of those other agencies. This is not one of those tax credits where you typically have private developers that are, I know what the argument is. Now, you know I'm a person, of course, that's very sympathetic to low-income housing tax credits. But this is not that same type of credit. It's not that they can't use it for production. But typically, this tax credit is used for homeless. It's used for battered women's shelters. It's used for other nonprofit agencies. Now, part of the issues they're having as well is that because the economy has been in a slump, it's a lot more difficult for them to be able to get donations into those agencies. So those agencies are able to offer tax credits to private persons that are able to give some assistance to them. So I was really concerned about it yesterday because this is a different type of credit than I think typically we're used to talking about here in this chamber, which has to typically do with the low-income housing and the historic tax credits. So yes, it is of grave concern. I gotten a couple calls on it yesterday of folks that were really concerned about where some of these nonprofit agencies and homeless shelters would be left after the elimination of this credit. And I will say that part of this is actually used for operating expenses, which is not consistent with what happens with some of the other credits as well. So some of these agencies really, really rely and need these credits as they begin to either make their facilities larger, for upgrades to their facilities, and for operating expenses.
The folks that have visited with you about these credits, or when you have had the opportunity to understand these credits, give me some understanding of what you have seen firsthand. I mean, have you actually gone and visited many of these non-for-profits, or maybe you have firsthand interaction with many of these non-for-profits?
I have, and in fact, it was interesting because I then had a list of those agencies that were recipients of the credit, and I'm not sure whether I have it down here on my desk today, but all of the agencies, if I'm not mistaken, all happen to be nonprofit agencies. Most of them were battered women's shelters and homeless agencies and those that are servicing homeless. I know that after you and I had a discussion, I know that it was actually a bill of the senator from the 2nd. So I told them it might be beneficial for them to maybe pull some of those agencies that were recipients of these credits in his district as well. I'm not sure whether they had been able to get that information to him, potentially. But I was really, really concerned about the elimination of these credits specifically, and certainly for a different reason than I am even some of the others. And we all know how I feel about historic tax credits, but certainly low-income housing. But these are a different tax credit that actually really directly serve a different group of people.
These are the credits that you are talking about, that you've been articulating, they are more social good credits. I mean, those are credits that were established for a social good of some kind, whether it's, regardless of what not-for-profit, there's kind of a umbrella there. Typically driven around communities and
direct services.
Right.
Some housing, depending on the situation, but certainly direct services along with the housing.
Well, these credits that you've talked about or that we're talking about now, no one's ever brought those credits forward and argued that those are economic development credits or that those are about...
These are not typically the credits that we talk about when we talk about the economic development credits. Of course, we typically know that those happen to be the historic and low housing, because these typically serve a different need, not just housing for individual families. I mean, certainly families are served, but in a different, typically a more communal setting, typically providing, of course, direct services, as I said, homeless services. A lot of the battered women shelters have received these credits. And if my staff is listening, if they could bring the list down, certainly from my area, and I believe there was another Senate district in Kansas City, and I will tell you that the list of those that benefited from these tax credits is far different from those that typically benefit from some of the other, quote, economic development credits.
Okay. Let's do this, Senator. While they are working on bringing that list down, I want to inquire of a couple other folks, and then I'll come back to you.
Oh, wait.
Oh, you found it?
Okay, so I have a list that gives a list of the credits allocated in the 9th, the 10th, and the 11th. The 9th District, Restart, those are in Kansas City, provides services to homeless. Rose Books Center, which is a homeless, a battered women's shelter. City Union's Mission, which provides services to homeless. Restart received another grant of $35,000. Rose Brooks Center received another of $35,000. City Union Mission, which happens to be a homeless mission, received $221,000. Rose Brooks Center received another $100,000. The Make It Right Foundation is a foundation that provides, of course, additional services, I believe, to other. I'm not as somewhat familiar with it, not as familiar with it. Many of these are for Restart, Rose Brooks, City Union Mission. There is PFHC Olive Park Incorporated. I'm not sure what that is. St. Michael's Veterans Centers. I forgot to mention they provide significant number of credits, of course, to veterans' homes. And I will tell you that of this list, all have been Restart, Rose Brooks, City Union Mission, St. Michael's Veterans Center. The only two of this list out of 20 grants in my district, the only two that I don't recognize happen to be this PFHC Olive Park and not as familiar with this Make It Right Foundation. So all of the rest typically have been directly to veterans' homes, battered women shelters, or homeless agencies.
Yep. And so we are going to eliminate that credit so that we can extend and or renew credits that literally go to one person or one company, or the overwhelming majority go to one company.
Well, Senator, you know I'm supportive of all three of those credits.
Well,
but
at
I
some
am
point,
particularly
Senator,
concerned.
At some point, spending is about priorities.
I understand that.
And the reality is that we're spending $600 million a year in tax credits,
right,
while underfunding the foundation formula by a similar number.
Right.
The fact is that the Senator from Boone has fought hard to try to increase funding for higher education, but yet we are hundreds of millions of dollars behind. So right now, our priorities in state government are spending money on low-income housing, on historic preservation, on giving special people special carve-outs where literally they get tens of millions of dollars of state taxpayers' money every year, and we come to this floor and act like this is okay. We come to this floor and think this is a legitimate way to govern, and it's just simply not. I mean, we started our day with a dialogue about how much disappointment there is that we weren't able to move forward on issues. Well, you know what? I believe that I'm disappointed because we haven't had ethics reform. What I have watched happen to the decay of the ethics of those who have operated inside these chambers over the last 10 years is deplorable. The fact that we allow office holders to leave money with millions of dollars in the bank, buy bank shares, take that interest and give it to their special interest friends is criminal, in my opinion. If you want to talk about being disappointed, let's talk about a disappointment in the way that we govern. Let's talk about a disappointment that, regardless of how hard the senator from the 15th has fought, he has consistently hit a brick wall at the other end of the building. I do not stand here today and criticize or fault any of these shortcomings on the members of this body, but I will tell you that just because the House continues to defend a handful of developers, a handful of donors, doesn't mean the Senate should cave to a bad deal.
Now, Senator, you know that I agree that there needs to be some reform, but you know certainly with low-income housing tax credits, those are providing an invaluable service in providing housing to folks who need it most, certainly in my areas and other areas of the state. So with this AHAP application in my district, they had allocated $3.8 million to those agencies. And, you know, that was my concern yesterday in regard to the Affordable Housing Assistance Payment, which we typically refer to as AHAP.
Senator, thank you. I appreciate it. Mr. President.
Senator from DeKalb.
Speak on the motion.
Proceed.
Let's begin with talking about our disappointments. As I started to talk about earlier, I'm disappointed that this body has been incapable or unwilling to take up ethics reform. I believe that what we have watched over the last 10 years as the House has changed the rules to essentially eliminate the need for the average member, where only two or three people in the House now matter, where chairmen over there who are removed and thrown off of their committees because of their philosophical beliefs. It's not about what they believe, it's about what they're told to do. If you want to talk about what has happened to our state government, it's hard to stand here and say that over the last decade that the people of Missouri are better off than they were before. That we, as elected officials, think that people are better off when two or three people run the entire process. When we actually have a tax credit program where in one credit, one individual has gotten all the money. In another program where we've spent over $100 million, one company has received 85% of that credit. Where in the Brownfields program, over 90% of that money every year goes to one company. I just talked about probably close to a quarter of $1 billion a year that go to three people in this state. I mean, how is that not a disappointment? How are we not failing the taxpayers of this state? If we want to talk about disappointments and things that didn't get done this year, I want to talk about energy policy. I want to talk about the fact that we may have fundamental disagreements, and that's okay. But the reality is right now we're not advancing energy policy. The state of Missouri economically has always benefited from low energy rates. But the reality is, you know what? Those issues have not been able to move forward in the last 4 or 5 years. And why? Because a handful of companies couldn't get to an agreement with the utility providers. And so therefore we as a legislature have been gridlocked. Is that a disappointment? Yeah, it is for me. Is the fact that we've not been able to deal with prevailing wage, and while I respect everyone's differences of area and reason and region, but in my area, they pay prevailing wage based on the Kansas City wage rate. In fact, in Worth County, Missouri, we had a situation probably 3 years ago now, maybe four, where there was a fire up on the square, and the parts building burnt. And when they came back around to rebuild that parts building, when they were rebuilding the parts building and pouring the sidewalk there, the crew that did that, they came in and they brought their employees in. They were building, pouring concrete, etc. At the exact same time, the courthouse, the public entity, the county across the street, they decided that they're going to pour a new sidewalk. And so they hired the same company to do it. And whenever they poured the concrete on the private side of Main Street, it was one-third of the cost of when they went to the other side and poured that same sidewalk, paying prevailing wage at a Kansas City wage rate. We have fought hard to fix that, and hopefully we'll get something to the governor's desk that might be signed. But we weren't able to move forward on maintenance and fixing that. Where I live, in the far northwest corner, right to work is a big issue. And I understand it's not in other areas, and I respect it. But it's a disappointment for me that next year when I leave the legislature, this General Assembly and those who have come before us will have failed to act in any given session on something that is so important in northwest Missouri, in southeast Missouri, in southwest Missouri. Those are real disappointments. For me, the fact that when I look at spending priorities, and the challenges that we have worked through in the budget, the challenges that we have, as we have stood here and we have all voted to eliminate career ladder for teachers, to nearly cut by 50% parents as teachers funding, to watch what has happened to the foundation formula. And let's not forget, this foundation formula is a formula that we wrote, we as Republicans, with a Republican governor, a Republican House, and a Republican Senate. We're never going to fully fund that formula. And the only way to, quote, fully fund it is going to be to go back and rewrite it again, drop the threshold so the amount of money that we're spending today, quote, fully funds it. That's the reality of what's going to happen. The fact that every day, every time that we come through here and we talk about new programs, new social programs, we always talk about sunsets. And let's make sure they're operating right. Our friends who have fought against moving forward with energy policy, one of the things that they have brought forward was, hey, we don't know how this is going to work. What's this going to really mean to ratepayers? What's going to be the real impact? Let's have a sunset. And you know what? They're right. But yet, we can't, on the same token, go and put a sunset on low-income housing or historic preservation. When we try to sit down with the House and get to compromise, their position is, we'll do whatever the industry wants to do. That's like saying that we're gonna turn over the keys to the kingdom. We're going to let the prisoners run the prison, and the rules of the prison are going to be whatever the prisoners want them to be. I mean, you want to talk about disappointments. Man, I got a list of disappointments we can talk about. And there's going to be a lot of stuff that's not going to make it through this year, and including a tax credit bill. But if we want to talk about real economic growth, it's not just about tax credits. It's about the overall tax code that we passed with the senator from the 8th that the governor is going to veto. It's the fact that historically we've had very low energy rates, and how are we going to make sure that continues going forward? How are we going to make sure that we actually have a quality education system that creates a workforce that is viable moving to the future? And you know what? For us to think that we can do that without a vibrant and dynamic and strong secondary and higher education system, we're kidding ourselves. But yet, we've done nothing to strengthen higher ed. I mean, when you want to talk about disappointments, I have a tough time as I look at moving into my last year in this chamber. I have a tough time believing our state is better today than it was 10 years ago. I have a tough time believing that what has happened over the last 10 years, we've stopped tax increases. I agree. We've probably stopped government growth. I agree. Have we brought minimal reforms? Yeah, the Water Patrol now works under Highway Patrol. You know, the Department of Energy or the Division of Energy is now under DED. Are those things all good? Oh, probably so. But as the senator from Clay talked about, we're spending $1 million or hundreds of thousands of dollars, some crazy amount, to reopen a Highway Patrol swimming pool. You know, we have a new airplane now. There's a success in the last year. I mean, my point is, I do not believe that we are going to be able to change the dynamic of this state, that we are going to change the future of this state, if we're going to change the direction of the state with a mentality that believes we can pick winners and losers better than the free market. And sometimes, guess what? It's uncomfortable, it's difficult, it's tough to say no to those who walk these halls who want us to give the next handout to the next company. I remember in 2007, is one of the few tax credits I've actually stopped. In 2007, there was a tax credit that was brought forward for semis. It was to pay for the power unit so they wouldn't have to run the trucks at night. And at the time, I was visiting with some of the truckers back in Northwest Missouri, and they'd put them on their entire fleet. And when they put those on, they said that they were getting a 60% return. If you look at the amount of money that it takes to run that engine through the night versus what it takes to run that APU through the night, then they were getting a 60% return on their investment, paying for it in less than 2 years. And I thought, man, that's really good. Any business would invest in something they could pay for in less than 2 years. And literally, within weeks, there was a tax credit bill filed here in the Senate. Actually made it out of the Senate the first time, made it through the House, and we stopped it on its way back through the second time. That would have paid for that APU. What it would have done is it would have paid for half of it, so that instead of having a 17-month return on investment, they would have had a 7-month return on investment. And you know how much it was? It was $20 million a year. Not a small amount of money. Huge money. You know, you want to talk about disappointments? I'm disappointed that we still do not have a judiciary that's fair and balanced. I'm disappointed that we're having to fight fights like we are at Doe Run, a company who employs thousands of people in an entire geographic region that a new company owns it today, completely different investors today than 30 years ago. The fight that they're having today about their lawsuits, actually the last time that mining occurred there was the year before I was born. I mean, that's the insanity that's happening in this building. Where literally a handful of special interests decide what is allowed and not allowed inside this room. And it's an embarrassment. So, well, on ethics reform, the House didn't want to do it. On energy reform, a couple of the largest companies in our state didn't want to do it. On prevailing wage reform, well, the unions don't want to do it. On right to work, boy, they sure don't want to do that. On spending priorities, we've just struggled. And on tax credit reform, there's been a consensus that we could reach here, but we've never been able to get the House to move. And until the day comes that they are no longer allowed to take contributions, they're never going to move. We are at an impasse. And I've come to the conclusion in my mind, without a doubt, tax credit reform is not going to occur before I leave this building. I believe that. I believe that I cannot overcome the amount of money that is spent convincing members, really in the other chamber, but occasionally here in the past, that just a few hundred million dollars here and a few hundred million dollars there, that it's okay. But yet, at the same time, we don't fund schools, we don't fund roads. You know, whether I agree or disagree or voted for or voted against the proposal of the senator from Cole, the fact remains, building roads is one of the three responsibilities our state has. Our state responsibility is to fund schools, to build infrastructure, roads, bridges, water, sewer, and finally to ensure public safety. That's what we're actually supposed to do. But today we spend over half of our budget, actually probably 60% of our budget, doing things we were never intended to do. Of our nearly $25 billion budget, just short of $12 billion of that are social programs. Think about that, $12 billion. I remember when I came into the legislature in 2003, January of 2003, the budget that year was $18 billion. And man, we chastised the Democrats because they had doubled the size of government in less than 10 years. I remember using the great talking point that there were 10 volumes in 1990, there were 10 volumes of state laws. By 2002, there were more than 20 volumes of state laws. I'm glad we stopped printing the volume books, because I would be concerned about what it would be now. The reality is we're at this impasse. And you know what? If we can't move beyond it, it's going to be no different moving beyond. Not being able to move beyond this impasse on tax credits is no different than not being able to move on it in energy or ethics or prevailing wage or any of the many other programs that have come before this body that we have not been able to get resolved. And the reality is there are some that run the halls that say, you know what, we should make it harder for the initiative petition process to work. You know what I believe? I think we should make it easier, because I believe the General Assembly is no longer capable of dealing with tough issues. We've proven it. We've not been able to deal with a very tough issue in my entire time here. And so as a result, what happens? They go to the ballot. We couldn't get resolution on gaming. They went to the ballot. We couldn't get resolution on cloning. They went to the ballot. We can't get resolution on transportation. My prediction is they're going to go to the ballot. I mean, that is what is consistently happening when we have a dysfunctional legislative system. And that's where we are today. And what is frustrating for me is this idea that the Senate and or the members of the Senate should cave because the leadership in the House is corrupt. I'm not buying into that. And I'm not going to stand here and listen to what I believe is an accurate representation of where we are. The senator from the 15th referenced it. Two summers ago, three summers ago now, whatever it is, man, he and I did not see our family for weeks. When the session ended in May, we literally kept working. And we worked for almost 2 months trying to get to resolution. And I'll tell you how those negotiations went. He and I would sit down in the room with the negotiators from the House. We would work out a deal. And when it was done, they'd say, okay, we need to call the developers and make sure that this is okay. And the next day, they would literally drive to Columbia or wherever they needed to go to meet the developers, show them the proposal, and make sure it was okay. There were a couple occasions, they just brought them with them, where we literally sat in the room negotiating with the tax credit recipient across the table. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It's like saying that we're gonna negotiate energy policy, but we're gonna negotiate it with the CEOs of the utility companies. I mean, it's just fundamentally not right. So to ask me to stand here and take a bad deal, a deal that I believe is bad, and I understand that we can all respectfully disagree whether this is bad or good. For me, it's a bad deal. I don't think it's the right thing to do for the taxpayers. I think that whenever we fund parents as teachers, the early childhood program in our state at $20 million or $25 million, and we spend $135 million, which is what is proposed in here, for low-income housing, those do not represent my priorities. When we're going to spend $100 million in here, guaranteed $100 million every year for restoring old buildings, while we no longer have the career ladder program for teachers in my district, that doesn't represent my priorities. While MoDOT is literally hitting a cliff and our roads are going to start to go downhill, not out of anyone's fault, but out of the reality of the funding challenges they now face, but yet we're going to spend $600 million a year unchecked with nearly $200 million of that going to three people, man, that doesn't represent my priorities. And so I don't think it's fair to say that we should take this deal or any other deal, that's a bad deal. You know, I've tried very hard this session to work in a manner that was different than how the Senate has operated in the past. The senator from the 15th and the senator from the 24th came forward with a proposal early in session on the tax credit for tournaments, trying to bring more tournaments to our state. They built it and structured it in a manner that you could legitimately show mathematically how the state would be made whole. And you know what? That credit was bigger than what I wanted it to be, but the body decided that we were going to spend $3 million on it or $5 million, or I don't even remember the number now. But what I knew is when we spent that, the state treasury would be made whole. And so I let it go. And then we came back around, and the new markets credit. Oh, we have to extend the new markets credit. 84% of those credits issued, of $110 million, 84% have been issued to one company. Oh, we've got to extend it. It's so vitally important. And you know what? Senator from the 24th and I sat down, and really the senator from the 24th, the company that's received most of that credit, to their credit, actually sat down with us and opened their books. And they said, here's how many jobs we've created. Here's what our payroll is annually. They went through it all. Here's what our investments have been, the whole scenario. And you know what? The senator from the 24th and I concluded, if we're not breaking even, man, we're really close. That credit is at least, it's close to being the right type of credit. So what do? We let it come to a straight up, straight down vote. It was supposed to go to the House for a straight up, straight down vote. What happens instead? It comes back to the Senate with everything under the sun. I mean, I don't know how many times we have to keep giving. I don't know how many times we are going to believe that the right thing to do is to cave to the corruption on the other end of the building because that's the easier thing to do. You know what? What is popular is not always right, and what is right is not always popular. And many of you who are sitting in this room know that that is the slogan that we used, and that was the words that we lived by, for lack of a better term, when we were fighting about Medicaid reform And think about this. In 2005, we couldn't get to an agreement on Medicaid reform. So you know what we did? We sunsetted the whole program. 1.1 million people were on Medicaid in Missouri at that time. And this General Assembly had no problem sunsetting it. If we did not act, if we did not bring resolution, if we did not bring reform, that entire program and those 1.2 million people were without government support. But yet, we can't bring any type of sunsets, or are unwilling to bring any type of sunsets, on those who receive the Historic Preservation Program, the Low-Income Housing Program. I mean, the irony of where we are is it's disappointing. To say that I am disenfranchised with the process would be an understatement. To say that it's time for me to leave this legislature is clearly accurate, because I do not believe I want to be a part of what is happening here. I don't want to be a part of where we're going. I want to be a part of changing this. And I actually believe there are some good people in here that really want to do what's right. Actually, I believe most of the people in here want to do what's right. I can tell you that this is my seventh year, I guess, in the legislature, in the Senate. And the first couple years were pretty bumpy. The last 2 years prior to this were really bumpy. I think the senator from the 23rd and the senator from Newton, have tried their best to manage a difficult task at times, keeping all the toads in the wheelbarrow. And the reality is that there's just going to be times that we don't get to resolution. But man, I don't know how we get to resolution when we have folks that we're negotiating with that put special interest above the people's interest. And I really believe that's where we are. And I'm not faulting anybody in this room, anybody that has tried to work on this proposal, any of the conferees or anyone who has tried to get to resolution this year. But just because we can't get the House to move to where we are doesn't mean that we should cave. That's my opinion. So unfortunately, I find myself here today on the last day doing what I had hoped we would not have to do. Fortunately, I mean, the senator from the 23rd has said it on numerous occasions. If we don't get an economic development bill this year, we're not going to get one next year. And although that's a disappointment to me to know that I'm going to leave the legislature without some type of tax credit reform, you know, I've come to that conclusion. I was on the dais the other day, and the senator from the 23rd came up, and we had that conversation. And I said, you know, I'm just not comfortable taking this deal. And his comment was, you know, good luck getting tax credit reform. And he's right. We're not going to get tax credit reform while I'm here. It's going to be determined by the rest of you, whether you're going to do it or not. And, you know, at some point, I just have to trust that enough people in here are going to want to do what's right. And maybe I'm not going to agree with it 100%, but, you know, this is a process by which there is a point that you can all reach, that we can all reach, where nobody loves it, but we can all live with it. I mean, I see the senator from Green sitting over here. He and I started the session on a judiciary bill that, man, I hated. It wasn't even a can live with it. And you and I, and he and I just kept working and kept working and kept plugging away with new ideas and new thoughts. And guess what? We got to a point where probably neither of us love it, but we can definitely live with it. His goals were achieved. I think he's headed the right direction. I mean, it can happen. But it can't happen when you're dealing with a situation that you're no longer negotiating with a member who is elected to serve the people. You're negotiating with members who are literally serving just a few people. So I wish I could tell you that today was going to be a day that we get to resolution. There are a lot of great ideas out there. Probably the one that I am most regretful of is the senator from the 10th, who has fought very hard for the angel tax credit. And why I personally don't believe we should have an angel tax credit, a tax credit to subsidize people who are very wealthy, high risk, high reward investments. We're going to subsidize it and take no equity in it. So we're going to take people who take high risk, high reward, we're going to reduce the risk by 50% and let them keep all the profits. Like, I don't think that's the role of the taxpayer. But the senator from the 10th is, throughout our time together, has always conducted herself as a true statesman. She's a wonderful person. She's fought very hard for that credit, and I feel bad that she's not going to get it done. But, you know, there's a point. There's a point where we all have to decide what's our issue. And different people have made different issues their passion. And what I have found in this body is pretty much everyone gets one issue that they're very passionate about, maybe even two issues that you're very passionate about. And the body as a whole typically respects and works with you well on that. But we don't get 10 issues that we're all passionate about. And for me, tax credit reform is one that I'm passionate about. It's one I believe deeply in. You know, I wish that we had a low-income housing program that wasn't the second largest in the state, or I'm sorry, in the nation. Think about this. There's only one state in this nation that spends more money on low-income housing tax credits than the state of Missouri. The only state that spends more is the state of California, which has the fifth largest economy in the world. There's only one state, actually there's no state today, not a single state today, that spends more money than the state of Missouri on the historic preservation program. Not a single state. In fact, 2 years ago, the next closest state spent less than half of what we spent. The last time I checked, when I added up what the 13 colonies, the amount the 13 colonies spent on the historic preservation tax credit, we spent more than them in 1 year. I mean, someone help me understand the reality of this. I'm not saying that we should eliminate the program. I'm just saying it's okay if Missouri is the fifth largest funded in the country or the 25th largest funded in the country. I don't believe that we should be the top funded low-income housing state. You know, the most fascinating part about the low-income housing credit, only two states in the nation fund dollar for dollar. Only two states, Missouri and Georgia. And in the other thing that's fascinating, less than 20 states, approximately 20 states, actually have a state credit. So the over a majority of the states in this nation have a low-income housing program that only uses the federal credit. Think about that. In fact, when that credit was expanded in 1998, what they said was that they planned on funding somewhere around 25 cents on the dollar. So the state credit was going to be around 25 cents on the dollar. And in some of the most rural, economically challenged areas, they would maybe have to go dollar for dollar. But that'd only be in a few areas. But it didn't matter because they were going to spend less than $20 million a year in the low-income housing program. Well, my friends, if we were spending $20 million a year in low-income housing, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. We were spending, the fiscal note for historic preservation was $14 million. If we were spending $14 million a year now in the historic preservation program, we wouldn't be having this discussion. I mean, think about this. We spent more money last year in the land assembly program than the fiscal note was for the low-income housing program. It should tell us two things: how broken our fiscal note process is, and then how messed up our priorities are. You know, I believe this country is great, has been great, is great, and will continue to be great because of a strong and vibrant economic sector. And every day, when we as a legislature believe that the future of the economic growth of our state is directly dependent on the redistribution of the treasury into other people's pockets, we are failing the people that we were sent here to represent. The free market works. It's what's made this country great. It's the driving force, the energy behind what has grown this country to what it is, what has grown our state to what it is. And if you look at the trends that we're on, man, it's concerning. Think about this. In the last 100 years, the last century, only two states in our nation have not had at least one decade of double-digit economic growth. Only two states. Missouri's one of the two. In 1900, Missouri had 16 congressional delegates. Today we have 8, which means the rest of the country has grown proportionately that much faster than we have. I mean, stop and think about that. That means that the economic policies in our state are not working. The economic policies that we continue to protect are what have gotten us into the situation we're in now. The poor economic policies that continue to watch our economy, that continue to plague our economy as other economies grow faster, my friends, this has got to stop, and it's got to change. It's got to change from a regulatory environment. It's got to change from a legal environment. It's got to change from a tax policy environment. And the reality is right now, we can't pass anything through this chamber that the trial lawyers don't bless. We can't pass anything through this chamber that a handful of tax credit recipients can't bless. We can't pass anything through this chamber that fundamentally restructures the tax code in our state. I mean, I have friends who own companies in Kansas City who are relocating. They're moving to Kansas. They're moving to Kansas because whether they're on the Missouri side or the Kansas side doesn't matter. And now they're going to have no income tax in the state of Kansas. That's the reality. Economies move, people move, money walks. Money walks because of economic climates. You know, I've had the privilege to spend a little bit of time in South Texas. And down there, there's a lot of the fracking technology has really taken off. The natural resources are tremendous. And you want to talk about an area of just unbelievable economic activity. There's a little town down there, population of 1,500. They have like a Motel 6. And if you go back 18 months ago, 2 years ago, you could stay at that Motel 6 for $50 a night. And that was probably on the high. That's probably the suite, actually. So for $50 a night, you could stay at the suite at the Motel 6. Now, all the oil resources, the natural gas resources, the fracking, the economic activity that happened because of that is blown up. To stay at that same Motel 6 in a normal room is now $212 a night. That is how much it's changed in 18 months. The investment, the literally billions of dollars of investment that's happening is mind-boggling. You're watching entire communities that had almost no population left now have 5,000 people there. And it's folks that have come in to work on the fracking, work on the pipelines. I mean, when you have economic growth, good things happen. When you have an economy that continues to expand and employ more people, good things happen. When you have an educational system that supports that economic growth, supports those economic opportunity, creates a workforce that truly can, that can actually support companies as they move into the 21st century, 22nd century, whatever century it is we're moving into, that's good. Think about this. One of the fastest growing companies in Kansas City is an IT company. And right now, the growth trend that they are on, if they hired all of the graduates with technology degrees from all of the schools in Missouri, that would still not fill the number of technology people they need. So what's going to happen? They're now having a real discussion and a real debate about putting a facility in Austin or putting a facility in Florida, putting a facility somewhere where people want to go to, where they want to be, where the economic opportunities run free. That is bad for the state of Missouri. When you have a company that already employs almost 10,000 people, that are going to, that in the next 10 years are going to employ another 10 to 15,000 people, they want to do it in Missouri, they want to locate in Missouri, they want to grow in Missouri, they want to be a Missouri company. But we no longer have a climate that people want to come to our state. That is a problem. Now, I don't know how many times we have to stand here and talk about it until we actually start to do something about it. So for me, you know, I wish that when we talked about a jobs bill, we talked about a bill that fundamentally reformed our legal system. I wish we talked about a jobs bill. We talked about a bill that empowered the private sector. We talked about a bill that cut the taxes, that allowed more people to keep more of their own money. Not a bill that takes the state treasury and redistributes it to a handful of companies or even a handful of people. That's not the future that I hold for this state. That's not the future that I hope that you hold for this state. You know, I remember when I first ran for office, economic development was very important. Every area of the state talks about economic development. And whenever the folks who recruit companies to North Missouri, the folks who recruit companies to St. Joe, when those folks would meet with us, they would talk about the need for tort reform. They would talk about the need for workers' comp. They would talk about the lost opportunities because of right to work. Not until I walked in this building did I even realize that economic development here is defined as more government spending, more tax credits, more government giveaways. It's been a real eye-opening experience for me, one that I hope and choose to...
Senator from the 15th, what purpose do you rise?
After a brief consultation with a couple people to my left, I very reluctantly would ask to pull that motion.
The motion has been withdrawn.